WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We will be spending most of the hour with Trevor Young, well known to the citizens of Racine, and now serving the city as its transit manager. We're going to be talking about a very exciting project which he is helping to oversee. In part two of today's program, towards the end of the hour, you'll be hearing briefly from a brilliantly talented local musician by the name of Brian Schottler, who is going to be playing an organ recital at Kenosha's Kemper Center Saturday evening. And this is a fundraiser for a big undertaking by the Alumni Association of Kemper as they celebrate their 150th anniversary. And we'll talk about that again a little bit later in the hour. I am so delighted to welcome back into our studios Trevor Young, well known for years as the representative of the 9th District for Racine's city council or common council, but then relatively recently, I think it was last summer, took on a new responsibility as the city's transit manager. And as transit manager, Trevor, among other things, has been overseeing the exciting transformation of much of the fleet of city buses to electric vehicles. And the launch occurred less than a month ago, and so we're going to be talking about that what is possible in the future. Trevor Young, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Happy to be here, Greg. Thank you.
I have to say, among recent interviews, I probably have not heard from more people than those who heard and enjoyed our previous conversation. So you were a popular guest, and I'm glad that you can be back. So,
well, it is an honor.
Glad to have you here. So let's retrace our steps a little bit in terms of, first of all, you coming aboard as transit manager for the city of Racine back, was that in August last year?
That's right.
So first of all, remind us, I assume that this is a position to which you were appointed, probably by Mayor Corey Mason, I'm guessing. Tell us about that transition in your life from what you had been doing before to this new position.
Well, first off, again, thank you for having me on the show. Transportation always has been a passion for me, most importantly because I see it as the key to Racine's future. We had this conversation in the last time I had the honor of being here, that Racine, being centrally located between Milwaukee and Chicago, is also the largest city furthest away from an interstate in the Midwest. So while we're in the heart of the third largest economic region in the United States and the 10th largest economic region in the world, in many ways, we're an island. And so transportation and providing access to jobs and opportunity for folks who don't necessarily have access to a personal vehicle has always been something that has been important to me. And before my role as transit manager, I served on this Common Council and chair of the Transit Commission, where we were able to have the first steps regarding a modernization of their transit service. My predecessor, Mike Meyerly, was a visionary just as well, and we worked closely together in the transition where he was stepping away and I was stepping in for a couple months, where we tag-teamed this venture. And it was great to learn from him and start the process of electrification of our bus fleet and, you know, sign off on our municipal agreements with our neighbors around transit service in Mount Pleasant and Caledonia and Yorkville. And so to be able to transition in with that mentorship and that experience from the Common Council on the governance side of things was seamless. Mm. And I was just grateful for his guidance. And really, everybody in Racine City Hall does such an excellent job at making sure that the wheels on the bus keep turning. Yeah. And I know that's cliche, but it's true. Our finance director, the mayor, the city administrator, there are so many players who do great work on the administrative side to make sure that transit in Racine is where it needs to be. And, you know, not even to mention the amazing team at Ride Racine. Our general manager, our clerks, our drivers, our dispatchers. We have some of the hardest working people in the industry, and I'm just so grateful for them.
Mm-hmm. So the idea of electrification of the bus fleet, or at least a portion of it, has been around for a while. What would you say were the single most important contributing factors to that that got people, including you, excited about that? I mean, what was driving this from the start?
The impact that electrification would make on three things: savings, service, and sustainability. And that really began with the Common Council having discussions around the Paris Climate Accord. You had the political leadership in the city make a commitment to taking on the cause of environmental stewardship and combating climate change at a local level. And when the federal government at the time stepped away from this global compact to commit to lowering our carbon emissions, local governments across the country stepped up and said, we are going to take on that mantle. And so cities across the United States signed on to the Paris Climate Accord and its goals, and the city of Racine was one of them. And that took the political will and leadership of Mayor Corey Mason and, you know, Common Council President John Tate II and others on the Common Council to make that commitment.
Mm. I remember from our previous conversation that one of the things that you took some delight in is that the step that Racine has taken with its bus fleet is a dramatic step compared to what other cities in Racine have done on this very same issue. Remind us about that difference between what other places have maybe more tentatively done and what Racine has more boldly done.
Yeah, the city of Racine is the only community in the state of Wisconsin that can say that 25% of its transit fleet is electrified. Hmm. That's something bold and big, especially in knowing that this technology is relatively new to the transit space. And so we are thrilled to be able to, you know, be a test bed for the technology and show that it really does work. Racine is following the lead of communities like Duluth in Minnesota that were one of the first, you know, upper Midwestern cities to say, let's do this. Mm-hmm. And we've learned a lot from communities across the upper Midwest on electrification, knowing that, you know, weather and the cold have an impact on battery. And because of those partnerships, we've been able to put our buses into revenue service and serve the public and not have any issues. But to your question about Racine being a leader, we have 9 electric buses that are now serving the public. And because of that, we're saving resources on diesel fuel. We are charging those buses overnight, so we have lower utility rates. We're exploring solar as a means of powering the buses in the future. And so we are committed not only to environmental stewardship, but being responsible with taxpayer dollars. These 9 electric buses, while they had quite the price tag, were funded by grants both at the state and the federal level at no cost to taxpayers locally. And so not only was it an innovative technology that we're investing in, but an innovative way to be able to fund a public service in a way that respects local taxpayer dollars. Mm.
We're speaking with Trevor Young, who is transit manager for the city of Racine, and we are talking today about this very exciting move underway to electrify a significant portion of the fleet of city buses serving the citizens of Racine. So take us inside the process by which this transformation has occurred. And I'm really asking in more kind of the nuts and bolts level. This was, first of all, I mean, sometimes when we talk about converting a fleet, it sounds like we're taking the buses and changing the buses, but we're really replacing the buses. I mean,
That's correct.
Are disposing of old-fashioned buses in favor of brand-new buses, top to bottom, stem to stern, that are electric vehicles instead of the other vehicles. What was involved in getting from A to B?
Well, I love that question because talk about the project management coming in handy. And there were so many people who were involved in that from the vendor side, Proterra, our electric bus partner, our management team at Ride Racine, and you know, everybody working collaboratively together to make sure that that transition was possible. You don't just bring electric buses onto the property and they start running. It took many years, or you know, from the process of committing to electrification, to writing the grants that paid for the vehicles, to then you know, knowing that they were going to arrive, preparing for their arrival by installing chargers and dispensers, to working with the utility to ensure that we had a strong partnership there, to then training our drivers and our technicians on the technology, and also training our first responders on how to address any issues that may arise if there were technical challenges that put folks in potentially harm's way. So there were so many different layers of training and adaptive you know, requirements for our facilities that led to being able to serve the public with this new technology. But think about it like, you know, boarding a Tesla. I mean, these are all electric, brand new vehicles that not only from a operator's perspective are wonderful to use, but as a rider. I mean, this whole effort isn't about anything more than our residents being able to get from point A to point B in a way that meets their needs. And this provides a user experience and a rider experience that is above any that they've experienced before in the city of Racine. Mm.
In that complicated process that you just laid out, and you mentioned, you know, some things that probably most of us would never even think would be part of it, are we talking about first we have to do A and then B and then C and then D, or were you having to work on A, B, C, D simultaneously? I mean, what was kind of the shape of this process? I mean, and how high was it stacked in terms of all of these different aspects? Or was it more contiguous that first you have to get this done and then you start doing this?
No, there are a lot of overlapping efforts that occur when you have a system transition like we engaged in. You got to think about it not just with the bus itself and the delivery of the bus and assessing the quality of the bus and you know, testing the batteries, but you're also looking at the charging infrastructure. You know, you've got we have two temporary 60 kilowatt chargers that have been installed to be able to initially charge the buses, as you have the permanent charger, which is a 1.2 megawatt charger being installed. And that's a lot of power. And so while we're talking about accepting the buses onto the fleet, we're also engaged in the engineering components of putting those charging installations at our facility. So this is all happening at once. Fortunately, we have, again, a wonderful partnership with Proterra and a great team in the city of Racine to be able to project manage this large endeavor.
Wow. Amazing. We're talking about vehicles that are entirely electric versus hybrids.
That's correct.
Was there any conversation about that sort of middle ground, or did it make sense as far as you were concerned to go all electric right from the start?
I think it, in part, goes back to the political will and the direction that has been provided by the administration to be good stewards of the environment and be responsible with taxpayer dollars. And because of that, we dove headfirst into the electrification of our fleet. And so far, so good. And we're getting rave reviews from our passengers. Pre-pandemic, we served over 1 million unique rides a year. And we're building back from the impacts of the pandemic on ridership. And we're hearing that people are boarding the bus simply because it's electric. And that's creating excitement and interest and getting people back onto mass transit in Racine.
I have a feeling you've had to learn a lot about a lot of different things through the course of shepherding this project, including just kind of at the heart of it, what this technology is, at least in layman's terms. Can you kind of explain how this technology works and the difference between, for instance, an electric bus and a gas-powered bus, except for the obvious that in some way electricity is making this new bus go in a way that the old fuel made the old buses go. But how does this new technology work, and what makes it so different a riding experience?
Great question. So that it's fascinating, and you are right to say that I had to learn an awful lot very quickly. I mean, if you would have asked me a couple of months ago about kilowatt hours and megawatts, I would have said, I don't know what you're talking about. But fortunately, I've been able to catch on and really learn quickly the process of electrification. So to put it in layman's terms, instead of filling up the tank, you're plugging the bus into a dispenser, which is connected to a charger, which brings the battery to a point where it can propel the bus. And because of the efficiencies that are built into the bus on a full percentage charge, they can go up to almost 200 miles. We have no routes in our system that are beyond that. We have 155 miles of mixed traffic routes in the city of Racine. So fortunately, on a full charge, especially operating at peak service, which is what our 9 buses are doing now, they can operate throughout the day and then charge overnight. And that's wonderful. We've had some conversations with people who are like, well, what's the difference between diesel and plugging in an electric bus that's powered by a coal-powered plant? And that's a great question. And so I love it when people bring that up because there is a serious response to that. Electric power, even fueled in that way, is 38 to 65% more efficient in energy use. So that's number one. Number two, battery technology allows you to get a source of energy from anywhere that can fuel that type of battery. So today it might be coal, but tomorrow it could be solar. And the buses will be able to be charged by whatever type of energy an energy exists that is available to it. So this is a way of thinking, well, into the future, what will the energy provider look like?
Right.
And so you can't do that with a diesel bus because diesel takes diesel.
Right.
Battery can take any type of energy that is created. And so looking into the future and thinking about long-term what the city of Racine hopes to do is engage in those renewable forms of energy to fuel the battery.
Right. Whether it's solar or wind or some combination or something else that hasn't even been invented yet. So when you say so that even at this moment where what you are using is more standard electricity from a more standard kind of source, even then, we're still talking about something that is more efficient than something fueled by diesel. What exactly do you mean by more efficient? I mean, the numbers that you just threw out about higher efficiency, what kind of efficiency exactly are you talking about?
Well, first off, less emissions associated with the energy use. So the level of pollutants is reduced even with the transition from diesel to electricity, even in that non-renewable fashion. And then secondly, the battery also utilizes regenerative braking. So while the buses are on the road and stopping at stoplights and stop signs, while the driver and operator are pushing that brake down, that is, in a sense, recharging the battery. And so talk about cool technology. I had no idea about that. And when they explained that, I was like, that is amazing. But this gives me the opportunity to kind of delve into the nuts and bolts of the actual bus itself. And I've got a little sheet here. So we purchased Proterra ZX5 Plus 35-foot buses, which are fifth-generation battery electric buses, and they have 450 kilowatt hours of energy available on board, which means that they can go up to 175 to 200 miles on a single charge. And they have dual charging ports, so they can pull into the bus garage and plugged in on either side, which makes the use of the bus more efficient as they park and roll off the lot. So we are just thrilled with the way that these buses have been engaged in their service of the public.
So tell us what happened on April 27th, which was, in a sense, the big public launch of this after years of preliminary work to kind of bring this all to fruition. Explain exactly what happened on April 27th.
Thank you for asking me about that, because that was such a moment of celebration for the transit system. We had Governor Tony Evers present. We had Secretary of Transportation for the state of Wisconsin, Craig Thompson, present. Greta Neubauer, who is our assembly representative in the city of Racine. Mayor Mason zoomed in to launch the event. And so we had a wonderful lineup of speakers. Chelsea Chandler from Clean Wisconsin was there to discuss the equity impacts of electrification. And those speakers all went through what the benefits are of battery electric technology, whether that be from an environmental perspective in reducing our carbon footprint to equity. You know, in many respects, you know, transit systems are large polluters. You know, we have buses that run throughout our area continuously, and to be able to eliminate those emissions and improve air quality, especially in neighborhoods throughout the city of Racine, that has real health impacts that we are addressing as well. And so we're thrilled to be able to not just talk about the environmental component of the work that we're doing, but also the impact on public health. And so we had almost 100 residents and fans of transit join us at our historic 1902 Corrine Reed Owens Transit Depot to celebrate the modernization of this fleet. And it was a beautiful moment to see this historic transit depot in the background of these beautiful new electric buses.
Wow. Yeah, one thinks about whoever constructed that train depot more than a century ago, or those who first utilized it. I mean, they would never dream that that pulling up to that depot would be vehicles like this, powered by electricity of all things.
Yeah, and I encourage everybody listening to take a visit of our historic depot, because it really is a beautiful building. And if you're a fan of architecture, it is gorgeous. So if you haven't visited our State Street Transit Depot, take a look.
So we're talking about 9 electrically powered vehicles, electrically powered buses, which constitutes roughly a quarter of the fleet of city buses. So where are those electric buses deployed? And are they deployed in the same place always? I mean, are they assigned to particular routes? And was that kind of a tricky matter of deciding where these electric buses should run?
Well, we wanted to make sure that no matter what neighborhood you live in the city of Racine, you could experience these buses. So we were very intentional on spreading them across the system and having them be on different routes throughout the day. And so we were happy to be able to share the love, you could say, and have these buses go throughout the system and not just be particularly on one route or another. They do operate at peak times. So in the morning and after work. And so as we expand the fleet, they'll be on the road more often. And we are pursuing a fleet transition plan to all electric.
Mm. So you're in search of more grant dollars to make that possible, I assume.
That's right. And fortunately, the bipartisan infrastructure bill makes that even more possible. $1.1 billion have been allocated every year for the next 5 years to transit systems to be able to become low emission or no emission transit systems. And because of that, the country is now going to be able to engage in that, not just the city of Racine. Early on, the Lono grant and the Volkswagen settlement grant were very competitive because there were limited dollars. And now, because of federal investment in these types of technologies, you're going to have American companies produce in manufacturing plants across the United States clean vehicles that will be able to serve the public across the United States.
Wow. This kind of, you already kind of anticipated my next question in a sense. I was going to ask if Racine is in a tricky position in terms of trying to secure more dollars to expand our fleet because we've already done so much. Is it possible that some of the money out there is more apt to go to other cities that are playing catch up who have maybe not done this at all? But it sounds like what exists now, some of that money is really earmarked for places like Racine that have already taken this step, even as boldly as Racine has, to expand still further. I mean, that some of the money out there is earmarked for exactly that. Is that what you were saying?
You ask an excellent question, which is, will our modernization of our fleet help us in our application for future grant dollars, or will it be a hindrance to allow other communities to do the same? And I don't know the answer to that question. We'll find out. We're going to continue to apply for funds and fingers crossed.
So when one boards one of these electric buses, and I'm really anxious to do that one of these days, in what way is the riding experience immediately and demonstrably different from riding a more standard city bus?
Excellent question. Imagine this, Greg, standing on a corner, just getting off of the bus, and the bus pulls away, and there's a plume of diesel smoke now that is right where you're standing.
Lovely.
We're trying to change that. So that's when you depart the bus. But when you're on the bus itself, it is a smooth ride. It's quiet. You don't have the sound of the engine rattling the body of the bus. And there's a rear window that is unlike diesel buses. So there's more natural light that comes in the bus. There are chargers on the bus for your phone. Everybody's got their cell phone. And so that's one of those small but mighty improvements that will make the ride even that much more improved. So from a passenger perspective, it's going to be a great experience.
How about the drivers? What have they told you about how different it feels to drive these kind of vehicles versus more standard diesel-powered vehicles?
It's a different experience, for sure, because there is a approach to driving to make sure that you get the most out of the battery life throughout the day because of that regenerative braking. And so our operators, which I give so much credit to, they took on the idea of utilizing new technology with such excitement and vigor, and they weren't intimidated by it. And we have such amazing drivers and operators. But the difference in experience is that they've got to train on how to use that braking technology in the best way possible. The smoothness of the bus is noticeable, and it has some get up and go. So they've got to I've heard back from our operators that they're really got to be careful on that on that pedal.
Right. I've heard from a couple of people who own electric cars that that's one of the most amazing differences, is that just the way it goes, and in a sense, just the effortlessness with which an electric car just takes off. Yes. And that's I have not experienced that directly myself yet. But as I said, I'm excited to experience one of these electric buses for myself. I'm curious, Trevor, how much you hear from your counterparts in other cities that are either contemplating this or are in kind of the middle of this themselves. And I wonder, in a sense, what sort of a community out there is there of transit managers in metropolitan areas like Racine? And as you are going through this period of transition and change, what's going on in terms of the exchange of ideas and experiences?
It is a tight-knit community, and they're certainly watching and asking great questions about how our transition is functioning and the challenges that we're facing. And because this is a community of people who want to be there for one another and who face similar challenges, even beyond electrification, we're in constant contact around how the program is going. And so far, rave reviews.
Great. Glad to hear it. I'd want to retreat to just a couple of more basic questions that I'm pretty sure don't have much to do with this specific issue of electrification. One of them is the construction of the actual routes that that the buses take. And I assume that nothing terribly drastic has occurred in terms of altering that at all, but I wonder what you can tell us about the when that master map of bus routes was kind of initially put together and to what extent that needs to be tweaked from time to time and the kind of things that are thought about in terms of exactly where these buses need to go and the routes that they need to take to get there.
That's an excellent observation. The bus is important, but the destinations are even more important. You know, getting folks from point A to point B to employment, to care, to education. So the routes really are informed by population density and where those centers of recreation or employment or education are. One of the things that are important in transit as well is consistently and predictability. And so routes generally are not going to dramatically change from year to year. And that's important. But you make a great point about development pattern shifting. There's a lot more development along the interstate. So what does it look like to expand service? You've got places of employment within the city that are shifting. So what does it look like to adjust routes, add stops? We partnered with RCEDC, the Racine County Economic Development Corporation, on even moving stops from one corner to another to better meet the needs of an employer. And we're more than happy to engage in those partnerships. So if you're somebody who is an employer listening and you have employees who rely on public transportation to get to work and you've heard feedback from them, we want to hear from you about how the system can better serve your employees and your company.
Well, because I think that's one of those things that a lot of people just don't stop to think about is the complexity of figuring that out, how a given transit system can best serve the people of the city or the suburbs or wherever they happen to be, and that there's a lot of ways to do that and a lot of different things to consider. How much do you have to also think about the people who most need this service? I mean, particularly those who, for whatever reason, don't own cars or have readily available access to their own cars. How much do you have to kind of think about where those people live, if it's even possible to generalize about something like that?
Thinking about our passengers is the motive of the work. Mm-hmm. It's the motivation of the work that we do. And making sure that they have a positive user experience and making sure they get to where they need to go is core to the work that we do in public transportation, not only in Racine, but across Wisconsin and across the country. This is about social mobility. If you're somebody who needs public transportation, and you're a rider of need instead of a rider of choice, what we have done is we've expanded your world. You know, someone told the mayor once when routes were limited or routes were cut before my time and before his time, that their world got a little smaller.
Wow.
And that's real. And so we've got to do our part to make sure that people have access to opportunity. And I think that's the key word, access. Because one of the things that I pride my personal story in is that, you know, living the American dream. You know, my dad, you know, adopted me from an orphanage halfway across the world in Russia. And I've had the opportunity to go through public schools and get an education and live a life that's productive and in service. And that really is the core of the American dream. And I see public transportation as such a core element of the American dream. You should be better off than your parents were. And that's foundational. And I see public transportation as such a key part in that.
Right. And I think you're so glad that, I'm so glad that you're saying it and saying it so well, because I think for some of us, as we think about those issues, public transportation is not always something that we figure into the equation of what makes it possible for somebody to climb the ladder or find their way into a better life. It can be a huge part of that journey. So what does it cost to ride the bus in Racine?
It is a $2 fare to ride the bus. We also provide paratransit service, which is on-demand response for folks who are not, unable to utilize fixed route transit, and that is a $4 fare. We're working closely with Racine Unified and other entities that we'll be announcing shortly on passes that will be available to folks.
Oh.
And so exciting news ahead around those partnerships. As of now, we've got a $2 fare. You can purchase a month pass. You can purchase a day pass. You can purchase a one ride pass. One of our goals is to make sure that those rides are affordable to folks. And so they are available at a cost that makes sense for people.
So, a last question. For somebody like me who is really curious and excited to ride one of these city buses that is electrically powered, how would I do that? That is, how would I figure out where I can find one of those buses and climb aboard and ride it?
We recently, and when I say recently, I mean in the last week, launched a new phone application through a technology partner, Connections, where in real time you can see where the bus is on your smartphone. And so all you have to do is punch in your current location, punch in where you want to go on your phone, and it will tell you when the bus will arrive and what your estimated time of arrival will be, right at the tip of your finger. And so if you go to the Apple Store or the App Store on your smartphone, you'll be able to type in Ride Racine, RYDE, Racine Transit, and the application will pop up and you can download it for free and see where the bus is and hop on.
Interesting. But is there a way within that to know where the electric vehicles are?
No, not at this point.
Okay.
At any given time, one-third of the buses on the road will be electric.
Okay.
So keep an eye out.
Right. And right now you are mostly busy expanding this or wanting to expand this and seeking out ways to make that happen.
That is correct.
What is the timeline for that? Or, I mean, is it depends on when the money becomes available and so on?
Yeah, there are a couple elements to that. There's meeting useful life benchmarks for our current fleet. So in order to be fiscally responsible, we're not going to replace, let's say, a two-year-old diesel bus with another bus. So we have to make sure that we're meeting the useful life benchmark of our current fleet. And because of that, it will be a longer process. But fortunately, with our federal and state partners, we can engage in a fleet transition plan that will eventually get us to that point. And so this won't be in the next year or 2 years to be all electric, but it certainly is the mission-driven approach that we're taking in the city of Racine.
I like the way you say that. Trevor Young is the transit manager for the city of Racine. and has helped to coordinate this exciting conversion of a good quarter of the bus fleet to electrically powered vehicles. Trevor, it's great to catch up with you again and to hear more about this really exciting undertaking. And we wish you and your colleagues well as you move ahead into a very exciting future. And I, again, appreciate you joining me today on The Morning Show for this conversation.
Always a pleasure being here. Anytime.
It is 8:49. You're listening to The Friday Morning Show on WGTD. And here is part two of today's program. And to finish out today's morning show, I'm really excited to be speaking with one of the most talented music students in the recent history of Carthage, Brian Schottler, a graduate from 2011, a Kenosha native, a really brilliantly talented organist and composer, a fine saxophonist and singer as well. Brian explored all kinds of different facets of his wide-ranging talents at Carthage and in the years since. And Brian is going to be playing a recital this Saturday evening, tomorrow evening, 7 o'clock, in the Chapel of Kemper Center, an event which is a fundraiser given by the Kemper Hall Alumni Association, who are hoping to raise funds to, among other things, renovate some of the fourth floor dormitories in order to be able to establish some museum space on the grounds of Kemper, which is celebrating its 150th anniversary this year. So we're just taking a few minutes to talk with Brian about this recital tomorrow night, what he's planning to play, and in particular, one piece which he has composed especially for this occasion. Brian Schottler, we welcome you to The Morning Show.
Hi, Greg. Good to be with you.
It's so good to hear your voice again, and I know a lot of people are excited about the opportunity to hear you. You have played a lot of huge and mighty pipe organs in your day. I dare say most likely the organ at the Kemper Center Chapel is not such an instrument. I mean, it's a beautiful instrument, but probably a little bit different from some of the other organs on which you have, for instance, played recitals. Can you talk a little bit about this instrument and how much you have played it ahead of tomorrow night's recital?
Sure. Well, I grew up in Kenosha, so Kemper Center is a special place for me in the community, and I'm thrilled to support Kemper Center's fundraiser with this organ concert. And the chapel itself is a beautiful space. And their the balcony of the chapel has an Allen electronic organ. So you're right. I've been around the country and abroad in Europe playing magnificent tracker mechanical action instruments. That, for example, the church that I am minister of music at down in Evanston, Illinois, has 5,000 pipes, a huge instrument, and the organ at Siebert Chapel at Carthage College, another large mechanical action instrument. So this instrument is very different. It's an electronic instrument of just two keyboards. But I think it's very special that a space like Kemper Center has an organ. Not every space is able to accommodate or maintain a pipe organ. But to have an electronic instrument that allows the repertoire to be played is really special. And so as I connected with Kemper Center and they had this opportunity, I wanted to bring music to people in this space.
So when it came to choosing what to play, I suspect that the nature of the instrument that you were going to be playing, and I suppose even the space in which that instrument is housed, probably had at least a little bit to do with the choices you made. Or by and large, did you just choose some great organ music and then you're going to just make it work on this particular organ?
A little bit of both, I think. I'll begin with a great prelude and fugue in E-flat major by Johann Sebastian Bach. This is one of the few organ works where Bach himself indicates keyboard changes. We don't usually see that. Usually it's just one registration for the whole work. So that's very special and actually one of his longest preludes and fugues. And then the program will end with three excerpts from Louis Vierne's organ symphonies. that Viren himself transcribed for orchestra to be almost like a symphony of extracts from his organ symphonies. Viren was, of course, the organist at Notre Dame in Paris at the beginning of the 20th century. So those will be two kind of monumental works for organ by two very well-known composers for the organ. And then the middle of the program will feature works that, for me, kind of spoke to Kemper Center's unique context as a girls, an Episcopal girls' school. And so I'll play a piece by a contemporary of Bach, Francois Couperin. He wrote two masses for organ. One of them is the Mass for the Convents, and of course there were the nuns, the Episcopal sisters there at the girls' school. So I'll play a short elevation that features a cornet registration for that piece. Another 20th century work by Dan Locklear. I was fortunate to study with Dan Locklear at Yale's Institute of Sacred Music as part of their summer composition program. And he, based on the Book of Common Prayer, which the Episcopal Church uses regularly, he wrote a piece, a suite, inspired by the rubrics, the little italicized thing that tells us what to do, kneel to pray or stand, things like that. And one of them is The Peace May Be Exchanged. It's a beautiful work that utilizes double pedaling with both feet playing separate voices throughout rather than sharing a single pedal voice. And because it was an Episcopal girls' school, I wanted to include a work by a female composer, and so I'll feature the Sonata No. 1 of Florence Price. Audiences have heard a lot of her works in the last several years with the resurgence of her orchestral works and chamber works, but she actually was an organist herself and composed a sonata and a suite for organ. So I'll get to play the last two movements of the suite, an air and a toccata, which we really get a glimpse at her kind of unique American voice in those compositions.
Wonderful. Have you, as you were outlining all of this, mentioned a little surprise from you specifically?
Yeah, and it was billed as a composition by me, but it's not really. There is a hymn tune in the 1940 Episcopal hymnal that bears the name Kemper, and it was composed by one of Kemper Hall's former musicians and included in that hymnal. And so I'll be playing that at one of their alumni worship services that's coming up. And I was not aware of this tune at all. And when I heard about it, I thought, what a great chance to do a set of improvised variations on this tune that many of the alumni know. And so what I'll do is actually play the tune in four-part harmony, and then I'll play an improvised set of four variations.
I think that's a fantastic idea, and it will be a, in a sense, once-in-a-lifetime moment, because, of course, you are improvising something that will never again happen in exactly that same way, and with a lovely tie-in to the name Kemper, and, of course, to Kemper Center, which this is all about. Again, this is a organ recital that's going to be played by Brian Schottler, a thoughtfully put together program with a wide range of music being offered up. And this will be tomorrow night, Saturday night, 7 o'clock in the chapel at Kemper Center. This is a fundraiser, and admission is $20 for this very special recital in this lovely, lovely space. Brian Schottler, thank you for joining me today on The Morning Show. I hope a lot of people will seek out this opportunity to once again hear the organ in beautiful Kemper Center Chapel and to hear the recital that you're going to be offering up. Thanks so much and best wishes to you.
Thank you, Greg.
Tomorrow, in the podcast version of The Morning Show, something I'm very, very excited about. I had the opportunity 5 years ago to interview Dan Hempton. You heard me talk to him on Monday's Morning Show about his recent book called Valor. On tomorrow's podcast version of The Morning Show, you'll hear my conversation about his book called The Flight, which looks back at the extraordinary achievement of Charles Lindbergh and his dramatic transatlantic flight in 1927. Tomorrow marks the 95th anniversary of Mr. Lindbergh's successful safe landing in Paris. And in honor of that anniversary, you'll hear my conversation with Dan Hampton talking about his book, The Flight. On Monday, as we return to broadcasts of The Morning Show, it's Samuel J. Redman, author of a brand new book called The Museum, A Short History of Crisis and Resilience. And on Tuesday, John Fricke talks about the experience after 50 years of attending the Lyric Opera of Chicago of being on its stage as a supernumerary in their production.